The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
A warm welcome to everybody on the line for this live session at Best Ideas 2021. It gives me great pleasure to welcome back Josh Shores. Josh has 2 decades of investment experience, is a co-portfolio manager for Longleaf Partners International Fund, and a member of Southeastern's Executive Committee. After 7 years in Southeastern's London office, Josh is now based in Memphis. He splits his time between the Memphis and global offices and remains focused on non-US investments. He joined Southeastern in 2007. Josh, it's been so great to have you contributing to the MOI Global community in the past. I very much look forward to your idea today. I will turn it to you now, and I'll be back for the Q&A. Please go ahead.
Thank you, John. And happy to be back on with everyone today. I am going to talk about an Irish company called Glanbia. And before I get into that, it's good to know this is something that Southeastern's invested in. John mentioned the Longleaf International Fund, where I'm a portfolio manager. This is a position there. And then in our European partnership, it is the largest position that was built over the course, really with a focus on the back half of 2020. So it's a relatively recent addition. And I'm excited to talk with you about it today and then take some questions. Southeastern, a lot of people think of as a business quality, and then people quality and opportunity, and then price, margin of safety. So loosely, I'll stick with that framework around Glanbia and why it's definitely ticks the box in my mind on the high quality business and the potential around there. It very, very much ticks the box on the discount relative to the value of the underlying different businesses. And then the people opportunity is a very interesting one with a lot of changes that are happening. And as you all know, change in markets tends to be opportunity, whether that's change in earnings power or change in corporate structure or change in boards and management, that can unlock interesting opportunity. And Glanbia certainly fits that paradigm. As we broadly look at Europe, after 20 years of investing in that continent, and then after I went to Europe in late 2009 and really focused on investing there for the better part of the time since then. And what we have found is there is a lot of opportunity around high quality global businesses that for whatever reason, be it structural, be it different incentives in the past, different alignment of stakeholders, where they are not valued or not performing up to the standards of global competitors. And in the past, we've talked about Adidas in 2014, 2015, and the opportunity there as it stacked up to Nike and Lululemon at the time that were trading at 2 and 3 and 4 times the multiples, the revenue multiples of Adidas, and how that was a huge opportunity if some changes could be made. We have talked about that actually on this forum last year with Domino's Pizza Group in the UK, where there was an enormous discrepancy between where DPG traded in England on the London Stock Exchange and where peers like Domino's in the US and in Australia and in other jurisdictions were priced. And we talked about the reasons why. That partially has been realized over the last year, but Domino's UK continues to have a significant amount of mispricing and opportunity. So that theme has been a consistent one for the last decade of cross-continent arbitrage, if you will, and helping nudge along some of the barriers to realizing that value, be they structural, be they governance, be they ESG, be they people, be they geography, et cetera. So Glanbia very much fits into that category. So shuffling on page disclosure, skip over that. I'm gonna talk a little bit about the history. Not gonna go into too much depth, but I just wanna set the stage for how the company ended up where it is and some of the dynamics that are at play as we think about the future. So based in Kilkenny, Ireland, Glanbia is the combination of two different dairy and cheese cooperatives, Avonmore and Waterford, which have existed. They really were formed in the 60s, but they have roots going back much further than that. And many of you will be familiar with the Irish cooperative paradigm, what happened in the dairy and cheese world in that country, and then how value additive businesses were spun out of that. Kerry Group is one of the archetype examples and very successfully executing on that strategy. And Glanbia is somewhat similar in its history. So they took a cheese and dairy joint venture, cheese and dairy separate cooperatives, put them together in the late 90s, and then in 2000, Evolve started the evolution into what I would almost call an asset-light cheese and dairy production model, i.e. partnering with the farmers to give the farmers direct control in the asset, to where Upstairs PLC, we'll just call Glanbia Corporate, the where we can invest, PLC, and we'll call Glanbia Cooperative Co-op for the sake of these discussions, where PLC takes a 40 or a 50% interest and then pushes operational control down to the farmers, and the farmers and the joint venture is responsible for a lot of the capital investment and management of the company. PLC benefits from the dividends, but takes off a lot of the capital intensity and variability that you've seen historically in the dairy and whey world. So that was a first interesting, innovative step in what had been somewhat of a very traditional business. The individual who led that, and of course it was a team, but the individual who seems to have been most responsible is a fellow named John Maloney, who took over kind of 2000, 2001 management of PLC and was a forward-thinking, innovative leader who set the company on a path towards much more value additive, high quality businesses. And this was the first step. Over the course of the early 2000s, they further developed their nutritional and nutritional solutions expertise, i.e., providing capabilities around input products to packaged food and other end customers. Think of DSM or DuPont or an IFF, these types of things. Now, initially, Glanbia, of course, was very dairy-centric in the solutions that they offered because that was their expertise in dairy and whey. But over the course of the 2000s, via bolt-ons and adjacent expansion, they added capabilities and started to form a nutritional solutions segment that was operated on its own and kind of stands alone. And as we fast forward to today, increasingly is a scale player that is not driven by dairy and whey, but we'll get on to that. In 2008, they continued this value additive. You can almost think of it as vertical integration. What are the expertises that we bring from our dairy and whey history, and how do we apply that further into the value chain to capture more of the economics? Okay, nutritional solutions, that's one step. Step two is over the course of the 90s and into the 2000s, as the supplements industry, the protein powder industry, the protein bar industry really started to develop, what was once a byproduct of a lot of cheese and dairy production in whey became a hot commodity, literally. And the boom that was led by companies like Power Bar and expanded to a bevy of offerings through the 90s and 2000s got the attention of PLC, to where they realized, hey, why are we selling this whey to other people at commodity-ish prices, and then they're putting a package on it and going out and capturing consumer good type of margins. So the acquisition of Optimum Nutrition, which at the time was one of the primary protein powder and creatine providers in the U.S. in particular, was the big step in getting scale towards that performance nutrition business and forming that as a standalone segment. So by 2008, 2009, you have Optimum Nutrition leading the performance nutrition segment. You have a nutritional solutions segment. And then you also have a bunch of joint ventures around dairy and cheese. At the time when they bought Optimum Nutrition is right around when I was moving to London, and I was a user of those products actually. And that quickly caught my attention, thought it was a very interesting deal, thought Glenbio was a very interesting proposition. But unfortunately, the market seemed to have caught on, and John Maloney was widely revered, and his management team had enormous amount of respect, and the share price always seems to be pretty fairly valued. And as you all know, Southeastern, being margin of safety focused, tends to want a discount before we are going to invest. And so I long followed Glanbia, but while it was always fairly overvalued, was merely a customer and not an owner of the shares. So I watched from a distance as they continued to take value additive steps of continuing this asset light, getting out of 100% consolidation of the lower quality dairy and whey, and focusing in on the high value global performance nutrition and nutritional solutions business, culminating in 2010, 2012, which was the last big dairy consolidated ownership in Ireland, where they created Dairy Ireland and put into a joint venture where Co-op, in exchange for basically shares in Glanbia, some of which were sold on the open market to fund it, Co-op swapped a big piece of their controlling ownership in PLC in exchange for control of the dairy and cheese joint venture, Dairy Ireland. So that left PLC with 40% of Dairy Ireland and Co-op with 60%, and took them down to about 39% ownership of PLC. So fast forward to next slide, Glanbia History 2.0. John Maloney retires. He had generated one of the great track records of that decade at 24% per year share price CAGR, pretty impressive earnings per share growth as well, and a real strategic transformation of what had been a very traditional old school Irish dairy and cheese co-op into a structure that looks a lot like it did today. And this, continuing on, we'll skip over some of this because I see it's taken a little bit too long, but you had Glanbia Ireland, and then that became Dairy Ireland, which I alluded to before. That got there down a little bit further, down to 33.5%. And then today, if you look on Bloomberg or FactSet, the co-op comes in at a little over 29% because they put up some of their shares as security against a convertible bond. So define, you know, how much they own, but they no longer control the company. All right, 2018, the next big thing that looked really interesting was the acquisition of SlimFast in the U.S., which gave a lot of heft in a lot of ways that we can circle back to if people have questions to, into important manufacturing capabilities and also technical capabilities that the company had not had enough of, particularly in ready to drink RTD products, where SlimFast was strong, and also added a big chunk of business and channel access in what became known as the lifestyle space. So that gave them the ability to split GPN into a performance space, which operates under different dynamics, under Optimum and some of those other brands, and a lifestyle space led by SlimFast and Amazing Grass and a few other strong brands there, which is a little bit more of an asset light contract manufacturing business, whereas the performance nutrition side is still a vertically integrated business. Something we can come back to if it's interesting, but importantly, GPN took on that structure of, we have two separate pieces, let's break those out and manage them differently. Keep in mind, even though this is an Irish company, this is a thing that should be in like big highlights here, but that didn't make it into this slide of the presentation. It really is a U.S. consumer-led business, GPN. So the GPN side is predominantly a North American, and within that, United States-led consumer packaged goods business. Nutritional Solutions is more of a global solutions provider that has no particular geographic affinity. So fast forward, last big thing in 2020, the co-op ownership had gone down significantly. They don't control it anymore, went down below 30. And today, for the first time ever, the co-op does not control the board of directors. They've gone below 50%. They had, since founding, the chairman seat and also two vice chair seats, which really set the agenda for the company. Today, you have an independent chairman for the first time, a fellow named Donard Gaynor, who is he's Irish, but his business career was formed and greatly influenced in the United States, where he thinks about incentive compensation and equity incentivization of management and shareholder value creation in a way that would be familiar to any investor in U.S. markets and is attractive. And the co-op, and this is no criticism of the co-op at all, they've done actually a pretty stellar job of being stewards of this business. It's just recognizing that the co-op as 30%-ish non-control shareholders of the company are simply more aligned with the rest of the minority shareholders than they would have been when they owned 55, 58% of the company and had de facto control. And that gets to this next slide. As we think about what's Glanbia today versus its history and how did it get here, one of the big overhangs on the company for a long time, and if you talk to different people, is what does the co-op want to do? What's their motivation and are they aligned with us as shareholders? And while perhaps in the past you could truly have asked that question and been skeptical, today it's increasingly clear that the co-op is a minority shareholder, a non-control shareholder that really would like to get paid, and they recognize the value of the underlying businesses of PLC and are frustrated at the share price performance. This is a group of about 40,000 farmers, very hardworking, independent businessmen and women who are notoriously cash flow and value in my pocket focused, right? Farmers are great about that. And they want to have complete control and 100% ownership of their Irish dairy, which PLC still has 40% of. So I think from the perspective of a shareholder that is not the co-op, any of us who are on the register and we're saying, hey, we really like your performance nutrition's business. We really like your nutritional solutions business. These joint ventures are great, as you see on slide five. They provide a nice annuity profit stream that's pretty predictable and to some degrees contractual that funds, the debt, funds the interest expense, helps with the dividends, and kind of frees up Glanbia Performance Nutrition and Nutritional Solutions to be focused on growth and the opportunity set ahead of them in their capital allocation, we'd be perfectly fine for the PLC to take control of all of the Irish dairy, and particularly if it were done in exchange for stock, right? And so there's all sorts of scenarios where I think the PLC is aligned with minority shareholders at this point on what they would like to get operationally and strategically and what they would like to get financially, which is the realization of the value of PLC. Taking a step over, where are we today and why is it undervalued? So today you have a GPN business that does about 1.2 billion euros of revenue. The margin potential there we can discuss. There's been some disappointments on that over the years, very clearly. There is probably what used to be kind of 14, 15% EBIT targets. I mean, EBIT with amortization targets are perhaps a little too high. Maybe it's more like 12, 13% these days, but that's still very much the case. You are able to see, as we go on in the slide, the development of comps for this business that didn't exist 4 or 5 years ago, but Simply Good Foods and BellRing Brands have listed in the last couple years and proven out this model of asset light, North American consumer focused packaged goods in an organically growing nutrition space that is one of the few bright spots in the broader US grocery channel. It's got a tailwind, it's growing well, it's all the trends of health and wellness. And strikingly, Glanbia has the number one performance nutrition brand in the whole space with Optimum, and the number two in the lifestyle space with SlimFast. But because of the disappointments and mistakes and perhaps confusion around the entity, trades at an extraordinarily large discount to peers like Simply Good Food and BellRing, who have really executed and performed well since listed and taken advantage of that opportunity. Then you have Nutritional Solutions, which is just kind of 800-ish million, but well on its way towards a billion in potential revenue in the next few years. At a higher margin, and mid-teens could be conservative depending on the evolution of that business over time. Best way to think of it in my mind is the number two to what DSM provides, but at a much smaller scale. These capabilities are ones that every food group requires, and they really need two people to offer it at least to keep both sides honest. You have local players who have some of the capabilities, of course. Those are interesting bolt-on opportunities, but there are very few, i.e. really just a couple, that can provide a global solution to a scale food group. So if you're a Nestle and looking to have a similar product in every geography of the world, and you need people to be providing that key precursor to your production, there are really only two people to talk to. DSM, extraordinarily run. We've been invested in it before when it was undergoing its transformation from what was viewed by the market as a chemicals business, moving up to a specialty chemicals business, 14, 15, 16, into a nutritional business as it's seen today and as it's priced today. We think this segment of Glanbia can similarly be positioned once it has the appropriate focus. Some people look at this and think, well, nutritional solutions within a dairy co-op, isn't that just a bunch of milk and whey and low value stuff? That was probably true a decade ago. It's not true anymore. We think the vast majority of the value and something like two-thirds of the profits here are coming from their vitamins and minerals premix business, which is very similar to what DSM is doing. Not exactly alike, of course, but very similar. And then their specialty dairy solutions has some very attractive capabilities like lactoferrin, infant formula solutions, and then, of course, the whey, getting the flavors right and getting the texture right, and providing that product precursor to other folks, other companies that are making bars and offerings in the market. That's probably a little bit lower value. And then there's a smattering of more commodity-ish stuff. But that, in our estimation, is only about 10% of revenue and in way less than that of profits because it's low margin stuff. So that's kind of your grains processing and your commodity lactose processing stuff. It's not a high margin business, kind of a mid singles type of margin, but again, it's only about single digits of the show. So the past reputation of this segment as lower solution value add on the spectrum, I think, is changing via organic growth, via some intelligent bolt-ons. I think there's some room to do a few more really interesting intelligent bolt-ons to further highlight that and make it where it can be focused on and even stand alone if it needs to stand alone. And then the joint ventures we've touched on, it's a collection across the United States, Ireland, the UK, and the EU. One of the main products here across these different geographies is actually mozzarella cheese for pizzas. So there's an intersection with last year's conversation on Domino's. They're one of the primary providers of Domino's mozzarella. And one of the great private companies of the world, Leprino, that people appreciate and I think value pretty highly, is the joint venture partner of Glanbia in the US and has been for a long time. So this is not a bad business. Now, there is some lower quality commodity cheddar and whatnot in here, but there are also some pieces of mozzarella production and other more specialty cheese solutions that are pretty interesting. Be that as it may, it's just a profit annuity that we think provides some stability to the company and maybe you could do something interesting with eventually. So why, given that interesting collection of businesses, is it so cheap? Well, a lot of things have gone wrong over the course of 2019 and then setting us up for 2020 pandemic on slide 6, kind of everything hitting at once. There was back in 2018 at a capital markets day, or I guess this was the full year results, but echoed at a capital markets day, they put out some targets on revenue growth for 22 and they have missed that severely. Now that 4.1 is not apples to apples with the 6, and we can talk about why in a second because the consolidation is all a mess, but let's just say they're still well below what their targets would have been, and the margins are also probably below 13-15%. So if you were an investor in 2018 and you say, well, here's what I'm invested on, this is what my expectations are, you've been severely disappointed. Augmenting that disappointment are accounting changes that have really obscured Glanbia's books. So it screens very oddly. If you just go to a Bloomberg or a FactSet, it's a complete mess. And there are several examples of that, but I think the one that's most interesting to focus on is the change in IFRS 15, which required the U.S. cheese joint venture to be pulled back into the consolidated financials, but just on the revenue line, not on the profit line. So you can see they tried to show this in this slide here from 2018, what the impact was. of pulling $784 million of revenue back onto the books, but none of the profits, right? It destroyed the seemingly headline EBITDA margins. Nothing changed in the actual ownership. U.S. Cheese is still a 50-50 joint venture. So we only own 15% of that, 50% of that revenue at Glanbia, but we have to consolidate the entire 100 because we're deemed to have control. So if you're just screening for this, you're like, what is this low margin bad segment? And it's because of accounting inefficiency, shall we say. And then on top of those things, disappointments in 18 and into 19, 2020, of course, we saw COVID. And we don't need to belabor that, but clearly if you are an on-the-go diet health company, pandemic lockdowns that seem to have been really beneficial for pizza consumption and alcohol consumption. Saw a stat recently that the average American had gained 15 or 16 pounds during lockdown. People were not traveling. You're not going to work. You're not grabbing your protein bar or your shake. That's very clearly a headwind to the business. And Simply Good Foods and BellRing have recognized that as well, though they've managed it pretty well. The unique exposure that Glanbia had was to an international business, which several years ago would have been double digits percent of GPN revenue, with primary end markets in India and Brazil and the Middle East. That we can circle back to this in the questions, why this was such a big hit to margins, but those essentially shut down with cross-border trade. You had GNC, who 5-7 years ago was a main channel partner of Glanbia in the specialty space, go bankrupt. Clearly, that's going to have a significant amount of disruption. And these channel on top of organic headwinds for the reasons we talked about before made for a very challenging 2020 for the company. Now, what's impressive is, well, what's not impressive is the next slide. So there's what somebody who is an investor in 2017, 2018 has lived through. Share price cut in half, more than half at the bottom, and earnings expectations cut dramatically on the back of all of these issues. So this is when you can see here over the course of 2020, where we're getting involved in that kind of 8 to 10-ish type of level, and brings us up to where we are today. So what's changed? Why has this disappointing performance of the last two, you could even say 5 years, that's led us to today, why is that not precursor to continued poor performance? Well, I think it's worth re-highlighting the board changes and the governance changes. There's a lot more going on under the surface there, in my view, but the fact that you have an independent chair and a board that's no longer insider controlled is not a small thing. The structural changes that we've seen of defining GPN clearly into a lifestyle business and a performance business in the United States is very, very important, because they're run differently. They have different product cycles, different consumption cycles, different manufacturing focuses. And in the past, they were kind of run as all the same and not being optimized. Now you've got them split into two different segments where they can be optimized. There have been some significant changes on the people side of that businesses, maybe not at the very top, but certainly at the coalface level, if you will, where you've had people hired into the US in particular that bring considerable local market knowledge and local market expertise and capability to that business, and I think will increasingly be taking charge of running the US side of the performance nutrition space. Again, there are some echoes of Adidas, where part of the issue in 2014-15 was a distant, somewhat provincial Bavarian management team that did not understand the local dynamics in the US or in Asia, but were sending down decisions from abroad that were not fit for purpose to those geographies. And the solution was relatively straightforward. You had high quality people in place locally, and you needed to get the corporate center out of the way so the high quality local people could make the right decisions. There could be a similar dynamic at play here. So that hopefully will help realize some of the potential of GPN. And then NS, Nutritional Solutions, we've talked about gaining scale, diversification, and one or two more bolt-ons, and I think you really have a business that can stand on its own, truly. No other small thing from an asset allocation value creator point of view is their first share repurchase ever. And this was not an easy task because of the co-op's ownership and because the co-op was just under 30%, shrinking the denominator could have pushed them back over 30, could have triggered a mandatory takeover bid from the co-op, and that had kept the PLC from ever being able to explore buying back stock. Now, for a long time, that wasn't an issue because the stock was fairly overvalued, but over the last 2 years, clearly there's been opportunity. Kudos to the board and management team, and particularly the CFO, who grabbed this by the horns and jumped through an extraordinarily complex number of hoops with the Irish regulator to get a special waiver on the mandatory bid if the co-op is pushed back over 30%. Then they had to take it to a shareholder vote. The ever confusing and unhelpful proxy advisors in ISS in particular didn't understand the nuances of this and actually recommended a vote against the share buyback authorization because of that very creeping control issue and that the co-op could buy it, which showed a willing lack of understanding of the situation and triumph of legalistic rules over what actually is the right thing to do, but that's no shock. And so frustratingly, the proposal only passed by what, kind of 8 or 9%. So it was a lot closer than it should have been. It should have been overwhelming, and ISS didn't help with that, but it was passed. Now the company, after jumping through a few more hoops, is able to take advantage of this crazy disconnect. They have an extraordinarily strong balance sheet. Kudos to the management team on that. They have been producing really impressive cash flow, even in 2020, with really effective working capital and supply chain management and SKU and cost rationalization. They've become really bloated on SKUs, particularly in GPN, so they've cut a lot of that out. And now you've had some really strong cash generation, really strong balance sheet that allows them to go on offense and buy back stock at this discounted price. So that's no small thing either. It will be accretive, of course, but also it's a big philosophical shift and milestone. So we really think that you've got the kind of word of the year here is coiled spring. They don't totally have had a bad couple of years. There's been disappointing performance and some disappointment at the management level. 2020 was very challenging for the entire market because of the pandemic, but also some reasons that GPN had brought in, or GPN specifically, but Glanbia had brought in themselves to 2020 that made it even more risky. But we think a lot of that has been addressed, leaving a much leaner machine, much more efficiently managed, much more focused, meaning this recovery, as the world starts to unlock, hopefully in the coming quarters, and as the economy starts to recover, will translate into very high contribution margin revenue recovery, very high profit scale, and really highlight what is an extraordinary mismatch between Glanbia's parts, the valuation of their parts, and the best comps. So on slide 9, you can see some highlights there. On this is not saying that it's gospel truth. This is kind of like, you know, whether it was Nike and Adidas or A Plus and SGS or Domino's UK and Domino's US, it's not total apples to apples. It's directionally apples to apples that these multiples can't last. So you see where Glanbia trades. I would highlight those two numbers where you see the asterisks beside, say, on EBIT. Headline looks like it's 19.7 where it's trading. Actually, it's 12.9. That's because a big piece of that co-op profit stream comes in below the EBIT line. So if you're just screening on EV to EBIT or comparing it to BellRing or Simply on EV to EBIT, it doesn't look as out of line, right? If you look at PE, you're getting a little bit more accurate perception. If you look at EV to EBITDA, you've got to make a similar adjustment. If you look at sales, there's even more adjusting you have to do because you need to strip out the 50% of the US JV that had to be included after IFRS 15, and you need to add back all of their share of the revenue of the joint ventures that they own 40 to 50% below the line to get an accurate EV to sales number, which is 0.83, that no matter how you cut it is way, way, way below 3.6. Maybe Glanbia shouldn't be at 3.6, but it certainly shouldn't be at 0.8 on that GPN business. Nutritional Solutions, similar, you're getting that at 0.8 times revenue implicitly. Again, not pure comps. DSM and carry do lots of other things, so I'm not drawing total straight line, but directionally you can see that difference between 0.8 and 3.2, or between 12 and 28.5. To further highlight that disparity, this is an even broader universe. This is not so much nutritional solution comps, but just if you're sitting in Europe and one day you might just own nutritional solutions as a business all by itself, where is it stacking up loosely versus its universe of peers? Oh my goodness, it's trading at the very bottom of a loosely defined peer set where the two closest are over there towards the left in the middle. But no matter how you cut it, it's pretty striking that a company like Glanbia with that sort of underlying business potential is way over there on the right. So that gets to the what is it worth and where are we today? The comps are important, and you might notice nowhere on either of those did I mention the Hut Group, which is kind of front and center, has sucked a lot of oxygen out of the room that IPO this year. I can't really say that the Hut Group is a comp because really it's trading as a Shopify type of tech platform, and it's a pretty impressive sales pitch that they have and story that they have come out with. So good job them. But if you were to go look at some of the sell side reports and say, well, on the My Protein part of the Hut Group, what are people saying it's worth? The ones I have looked at this week are somewhere I saw 2.3 times revenue, 3 times revenue, I saw 4.9 times revenue, saw 33 times EBITDA. So suffice to say, even stripping out the SaaS solutions API-based part of the Hut Group, which is very cool, and trying to get into what the sell side is estimating the MyProtein part is worth, it helps support our comp math on what Glanbia should be worth. And incidentally, worth mentioning, as much as the Hut has been a headwind for the UK and Europe businesses, of course, and Glanbia's Body and Fit direct-to-consumer platform, which is about $100 million of revenue that people don't even think about, but is kind of an interesting hidden asset there, they have failed, the Hut, to make inroads into the US despite years of trying. It's not like this IPO is the first time that anyone has heard of MyProtein or the Hut, or the first time that they've tried to break into the US. Amazon has a complete stranglehold on that market. Walmart's coming on strong. Glanbia is a valued partner of Amazon in particular. If you go do a search on protein powders and from a US business point of view, last time I looked, 9 of the top 10 suggested protein powder solutions were Glanbia products. So you can see the scale of that integration. And if people ask about it, we can circle back to the pros and cons of that, because certainly that makes some nervous. Increasingly, I think it's a really valuable channel access, especially in a administration changing world where Amazon might be less able to act as predatorily as they had in the past. So put the Hut Group aside, summary, because I'm going on too long. Governance greatly improved, and I think we'll continue to head in that direction. Capital allocation, big steps forward with share buybacks for the right reasons. Don't forget, they're also paying a 2%+ dividend. So you get something in the meantime. And discipline around M&A. They've done some bad deals in the past, questionable value add. There's been a new tightening up, I think, of the parameters that have put in place that we should see applied going forward. And then the sum of the parts, go do your math, pick your multiples on what you think these businesses would be worth. But even if you just take GPN at around 2x revenue, for example, which would be kind of a high teens to 20 times FCF potential, that's 825 to 875 a share. Nutritional solutions, that should be at least 20 times, which is about 2.5x plus revenue. That's 750 to 8 a share. The Cheese and Jerry joint ventures, it's hard to find the exact comps, but anything you see is north of 1x revenue. I can't get that. So I kind of settle out around 0.5 times, which is supported by the DCF, and works out to about 4 a share. And you got 2 a share of net debt, and that gets you to 18 to 1850 of value right now versus a roughly 10 share price. Interesting to note that within that, there's about $30 million of corporate expense that's really just the PLC and the supporting of the co-op. That's worth about 1 a share if it ever were to go away for any reason. So there's a little bit of interesting optionality there. And that 18 to 1850, we think can grow significantly towards 20 over the next 3 years. So you've got to double from the current share price on execution. And then free cash flow consensus has about 81 cents for 21. That could be low, But either way, I think that can grow by about 50% over the next 3 years. And the key thing here is if management does not execute on all of this potential and realize this value themselves, very strong probability that something changes structurally around this company and others are given a shot at getting after this underlying embedded value. With that, John, I think I went way longer than you wanted me to. Apologies. I'll wrap up.
Thank you so much, Josh. That was terrific. Just a reminder to everyone on the line, if you do have a question, feel free to type it into the online interface. I'm going to take a question from the queue. It says, it's clear that Glanbia has strong cash flow generation potential. Do you see any significant reinvestment opportunities in either one of the three existing lines of business or in new adjacent ones, or is the best capital allocation strategy to return cash to shareholders?
Good question. I think there are reinvestment opportunities in nutritional solutions, particularly. There are many local players that bring either geographic densification of your market access or adjacent capabilities. They're often closely held or family companies, so the sales cycle can be long. And when one of those comes available, then you want to take advantage of it. And so I would fully support allocating capital constructively into the nutritional solution space for the right deals at the right price. GPN, less likely. Prices there are very high. If you go look at where comps are. Now, of course, you can always find some also-ran protein bar business that's available for less than 1x revenue or even below. But for the scale CPG quality branded players, the prices are very high and the cheapest place to buy that is in the market in Glanbia. And so from that perspective, allocating capital to share repurchase is the best thing unless there are brilliant nutritional solutions acquisitions to be done.
Josh, what would be the key items or data points to keep an eye on going forward to gauge how this thesis is playing out?
GPN margins. So that's been the core of the disappointment in this company over the last 2 years has been that aspirational mid-teens margin level going away. And run rate early this year was more mid to high single digits, right? So exiting this year, they're back up well into the double digits. I suspect when they come out next month with full-year results and guidance, they're going to talk strongly about double-digit earnings margins, earnings potential in 21 and growing into 22 for GPN, and they need to deliver on that. So watch the margins in GPN and then watch the organic top line in GPN. I think the industry, the market, particularly in the US, is still growing mid-singles. In other parts of the world, less developed areas, you have even faster growth. So Glanbia needs to get back to keeping up with at least market growth and maintaining their market share. So I would watch that around GPN as well. And those would be the main two pieces. The joint ventures are think of those much more like a convertible bond. There are a couple facilities coming online right now that should contribute. They've been investing over the last 2 years in Michigan and elsewhere in Europe because of Brexit that will start contributing next year in 21, I guess, this year now. Into profits, so that's going to be a nice little boost. That's a bit of a non-earning hidden asset. And for nutritional solutions, I would keep an eye on the business mix and the changes that have happened over the last couple of years and what future bolt-ons could add around buttressing the much higher quality specialty part of that business versus the backward-looking market view of it being more towards the dairy commodity end of the space. And it should be able to keep up over in the fullness of time with a DSM type of low to mids organic growth.
Looking longer term, maybe 5 to 10 years out, what would you flag as the key risks to the business itself?
Two different things. it is kind of different for each segment. So GPN is the professionalization is not the right word. Institutionalization of that market, particularly in the United States. So if you go back 15 years, it was a little bit of the Wild West, right? On ingredients and on products. And you really had to appeal to your consumer with purity of products and reputation, which is why Optimum Nutrition was so successful. They were known for vertical integration and having complete control start to finish, and that you were getting the purest and highest quality protein. So that's what Optimum was built on. And up until 4 years ago, 3 years ago, was probably a top one or two determinant of the buy decision. In the last 3-4 years, as the Pepsis and the Nestles, and I would say the BellRings and the Simply Good Foods are run much more like that, which is, I would call, like a CPG-focused, brand-led, channel access-led approach to the market, less a product quality or product purity-led. And now I'm not denigrating their product quality. I'm just saying, if you're, it's like the 80-20. If you're 80% of the way there, there's not as much benefit of getting to 98. I would call old Optimum focusing on the 98 instead of the let's get to the good enough and then think about the other things that really differentiate. So if GPN stands still, a big risk, and not even in 5 to 10 years, in 2 to 3 years, will be that trend. So they have got to run this business like a consumer packaged goods, channel focused, marketing aware, reinvestment dollar savvy, customer segmenting business, which is not what it was 5 years ago. And so the changes they've made on bringing people in with that expertise and then pushing, hopefully, the decision making closer to the consumer in the United States are a step towards that. So we'll see if Plan B is able to get it done themselves. If they're not, I think there are plenty of people who can get it done. So 5 to 10 years is too long. GPN needs to show it can work in 1 to 2, or something else is likely to happen on realizing the brand value that's latent in there. And nutritional solutions is a different question. I suspect on a 5 to 10 year basis, that's a much firmer, it's really the part of the business that on a 5 to 10 year time horizon, you could be really excited about, because there's a long runway of organic growth. There's a long runway of bolt-on opportunity potential. There's a need for them as a player and a counterweight in the market. And I could completely see the nutritional solutions business 10 years from now being multiples of what it is today in size and a standalone company creating a lot of value for its customers. Dairy and the joint ventures is a different ballgame. I think there are other solutions around there that are not as critical to the overall PLC story, but we'll still probably be eating cheese and milk, so there will be a place for them somewhere.
Terrific. Well, I will leave it there. Josh, thank you so much for presenting such an in-depth case here, and thanks to everyone participating. I hope this was a value added, as it was for me, certainly. Always a pleasure to have you with us, Josh. Truly enjoy your presentations and your contributions. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you, John. Thank you for those listening. And one of the things I have benefited from Manual of Ideas over the years are the connections that it makes. It's a great job on that, John. But if anybody here listening has an insight or a criticism or disagrees with part of my case here, please reach out. I'd love to have a dialogue and conversation and learn more.
Terrific. And we're always happy to provide an introduction. Take care, everybody. Take care. Bye-bye.